Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that, cools up to 8 times faster, and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. Enjoy personalized comfort for better sleep night after night. And now, during our President's Day sale, take 50% off our limited edition bed, plus free home delivery with any bed and base. Ends Monday. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And we got a special bonus episode of the podcast for you today with an incredible creator. Very excited he is joining us. We talked about his work many, many years ago, but he is back with something that is both new and old at the same time. Ladies and gentlemen, Rick Veitch. Rick, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh my gosh, so excited to chat with you. So to give a little bit of setup for folks who may or may not know about this, many years ago, you had an incredible run on Swamp Thing that ended abruptly. We'll get into the why and the how of that in a second. But as a surprise announcement at this past New York Comic Con, and Justin and I were both in the room for this, the Vertigo panel, they announced that it's finally coming back, the final 4 issues of the run as Swamp Thing 1989, and now we know that Swamp Thing 1989 number one is going to release April 29th under DC Black Label. It's going to be 4 issues presented in the original 1980s format, period accurate numbering on the cover, facsimile styles, paper stock, vintage ads. This is all very cool, but why don't we jump all the way back there to 1988, 1989 and talk about this? Because there's while I was researching before we got on for this podcast, there's a lot of apocryphal stories and things about this release and what happened or didn't happen behind the scenes. So from you who wrote it, who are there, what actually happened with this book? Why did Swamp Thing number 88, as it was numbered at the time, not come out?
The best I've been able to piece it together, and I didn't know this at the time, was that someone in the DC offices was offended by it at the last minute, and they complained to Jeanette and Paul. And Jeanette, I guess, made the decision to pull the plug on it. It was all very much last minute. DC had already signed off on the whole thing. You know, it looked like it was all going to happen in good faith. And so I resigned at that point. And they brought someone else to write the book in after that.
And had that been building at all for a while, or was it just sort of a surprise, like rug pull out of nowhere?
Well, that was a surprise, you know, for Swamp Thing 88. But there had been a lot of problems working with DC in the 80s. You know, they were this old, successful, hidebound company that had, you know, all of a sudden was confronted with young Turks like myself and Steve Bissett, John Tottleben, Frank Miller, Alan Moore, Howard Chaykin, who were demanding more of a creative say in the work itself and more humane rates and royalties and health insurance and things like that. So there was it was very bumpy. My tenure behind the scenes, it was very bumpy. There were always kind of crazy things going on that were very, very frustrating. So Swamp Thing 88 for me was kind of like, that was the explosion of it all. It was just like, okay, I've had it. I'm out of here.
Well, and that was, correct me if I'm wrong about all this. So a lot of your run leading up to 88 was as much an Etrigan book in a certain way as it was Etrigan the Demon, as it was Swamp Thing. And I believe the plan for the final 4 issues was a time-traveling story to tell Etrigan's origin and really, it seemed like, wrap up your run on Swamp Thing. Is that all accurate?
Etrigan's origin happens in Swamp Thing 88, the Jesus issue.
Okay.
Yeah. And then there's 3 issues after that where Swamp Thing continues to fall backwards into time until he gets to the Big Bang and beyond. And so then there's this big reveal of what's beyond the Big Bang, which I don't want to spoil anybody here.
But been sitting on that for quite some time.
Yeah. Well, you know, it took me a while to see it after the whole mess happened. You know, at the time, I hadn't seen what really in the DC universe lays beyond the Big Bang. But in the ensuing years afterwards, it hit me like, oh, yeah, I should have brought this in. And so
that's so exciting.
The whole delay, gave me that that ability to bring that character in. And so it's almost worth it. You know?
I was going to say, so you feel like this is almost, it took this time to find the final form of this, of your run.
There's that, and there's also the question of how Swamp Thing and Jesus come together and create this kind of crazy energy that drives people nuts. It's just something about it where you take, you know, the Christ and you take the Green Man and you bring them together and, like, things go crazy. And so maybe the world just wasn't ready then to even consider that, and that maybe now it is, you know?
Well, and just to get more specific about it, again, for people who don't know, but I think it's become referenced over the past couple of decades as the Swamp Thing Jesus issue, and it is, he goes back to the crucifixion, he gives Jesus water when he's on the cross, and there was a drawing of Swamp Thing as the cross, is that?
No.
Very wrong, okay.
Swamp Thing as the crucifix was the cover. And I think that was the breaking point with DC, because up to then, you know, they'd seen the interiors and nobody had, you know, squawked, but it turned in the cover. And that was the one of him as a crucifix. And he's got his head back, you know, like he's suffering. And I think that was it that, like, really, you know, teed some people off at DC. In the story itself, he's in the Garden of Gethsemane and he witnesses Jesus, you know, making the final decisions and preparing for his own sacrifice to save the multiverse.
So just in terms of process, I mean, this is getting in the weeds, but Michael Zulli, who is the penciler on the issue, he had, I believe, done most of 88. Is that correct back in the day?
He had completed 88, and it was Tom Sutton, I believe, had started to ink it. So there was like maybe three pages inked. But after, you know, this latest round where DC decided to publish the thing, they talked to Michael and Michael said, I'm going to redo it. And so he started re-penciling the whole story, but then he got really sick and he couldn't quite finish it. It was all loose and kind of layout-y. So we had to make the decision of to go with the new stuff or to go with the old stuff. And my vote was for the old stuff because I think that's what the fans wanted. And it was a brilliant job, too. You know, it wasn't like there was anything lacking there. It was Michael at his best. But knowing Michael, he had to want to redo it, you know, make it the last thing on his board before he passed away.
And so this is me continuing to walk through the history a little bit. I had read that back in 2004. So you quit DC. You left DC for a while, but you did come back. Eventually, you started to do some other work. And I believe in 2004, you kind of broached the subject of, hey, maybe we can do this again. But it didn't work, obviously, at that point, right?
There have been a number of attempts to get it done over the years and some real heroic actions by people who worked at DC to try to convince management to do it. And they thought about it, but it just never happened.
Well, and is that them reaching out to you or you reaching out to them and then just trying to, like, sort of put a package together to make it happen over the time?
Yeah, it happened in a couple of different directions. One was when DC bought Wildstorm. They bought my contract with Wildstorm. So all of a sudden, you know, they owned my contract. So I had to decide whether or not to work for them or just to give up working on Grayshirt, which I really didn't want to give up. And so we chatted about it and I think the way we agreed on it was, they would announce that they would think about it. They would reconsider it, you know, which was enough of a, you know, fig leaf for me to go forward, but, they never did. But then there were other times later on where people who I'm not going to name who worked at DC really, you know, tried to get in there and try to talk sense to them. But the whole issue was just such a mess that I can't blame management for not wanting to wade back into that swamp again, because it just seemed like a thing that with, you know, why do it if you're going to ruin your career, you know, or something like that. It was that big of a mess.
Well, then Why is this the time that worked?
It is because of two people. One is Rich Handley, who is a comic book historian and fan, who took it upon himself to convince people at DC Comics that they should do this. And the person he connected with and who got behind it was Alex Gaylor, who is the editor of this series. And Alex was just brilliant. I mean, he talked me into finishing the last three books before DC had agreed to truly release Swamp Thing 88. He got me to go forward on faith. And I didn't have much faith because there had been a lot of failed attempts, as I'm saying. But he's good. And in that process, he got DC to really seriously look at the situation and got them to decide to make the decision to release it. I would have to point out, though, that here it is February 9th, and it's not been released yet. So, you know, it's like I'm ready to take my victory lap because, you know, too many times, you know, I've gone to kick the football and Lucy's pulled it away. And so until I've got it holding in my hands, I'm really not going to feel all that great.
You had mentioned we touched upon that, unfortunately, Michael Zulli passed away in 2024. Tom Mandrake is coming in and penciling the rest of the three issues. What's it like working with him? And how does it change how you've approached it versus...
It's going to change it a bit.
Okay.
He's an old Cubie. You know, I knew him back when we were young men and studied together under Joe Kubert. So
I haven't heard that before.
Cultural values and how to approach a story and stuff. And Tom had penciled a couple of the time travel issues just before Swamp Thing 88. So we were really comfortable working together, and he was definitely the right guy to come in. He just did a great, great job, totally professional, no drama. You know, he just got it done, and it's really, really great.
Yeah.
What was it like just getting back into the work? Like you said, obviously the time affected some of the content with the Big Bang, but what was it like just like almost time traveling yourself being there?
It was getting back into a different headspace, especially when writing, because in those days we didn't have computers. And so you wrote your script on a typewriter, meaning that it was difficult to make corrections. So you had to really think about what word you wanted to put down or what phrases or how, or the rhythms of it ahead of time, rather than, you know, as we do on computers, we blast it down and then we polish it and polish it and polish it. So I had to get back into that mindset of the actual typing and everything, but it was a great creative relief to be able to really finish the story that I've been carrying around in the back of my brain for 30 odd years.
You typed this the way you did back then rather than using a laptop?
But, you know, I didn't, but I did work on a computer. But, I, you know, when I told DC that, you know, I got to get back into this headspace, they actually offered to buy me an IBM Selectric.
Oh, wow.
That's awesome.
I'm not kidding you. They really did.
That's really funny.
You know, I decided, no, I'm going to do it on the computer. But it was getting back into that way of thinking of carefully looking at what words I want to put down and how they're going to fit, kind of like editing ahead of time.
Yeah. Deliberate way of working.
Obviously, like you're saying, the first issue was pretty much locked, so you could give the fans that experience that they never got. But I am curious about your developing or changing view on religion, if any, given that the content of the first issue is about Jesus, does deal with that. But that was also, again, like we're talking about decades ago. So how has that changed?
I don't think it's changed. And, you know, wanting to use Jesus wasn't to a comment on religion. It was a comment on spirituality. It was like what Jesus really talked about is what I try to bring into the story. You know, I think a lot of people were worried, you know, that I was going to make fun of it or do something satirical, but it was quite the opposite. You know, I tried to bring in the values that Jesus taught and that have been reported back to us through scripture and stuff. The whole religious end of it, like, you know, who runs the churches and all of that, you know, that's no part of it. And I'm not interested in it at all, but the spiritual part of it is the key part of the story. And I'm wondering, you know, in retrospect, if that's what kind of might have set off people or something, like maybe we're not supposed to think those things. I don't know. But to me, they're important.
Yeah. How do you feel like the story hits different if it for a people? Like, the world has changed a lot. Like, do you feel like, is it, are there a benefit to having it come out now, or are you wishing for that old world the story had entered into?
I'm not sure, but, you know, I'm watching the situation to see what the response is. And if maybe it is, I mean, like, as I said before, you know, you're taking the symbol of the Christ, and then you're taking the symbol of the green man, and you're bringing them back together. And in a sense, much of what happened in religion and Christianity was a separation of that. Hmm. You know, the Catholic Church burned the witches and, right, and the wise people and the people that understood nature and stuff. So I'm kind of bringing those things two back together. I know it's only a comic book and, you know, it's not a big deal or anything, but still, that's kind of what's happening. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of response we get out of that.
This is a bigger, wider question, but what is it about Swamp Thing that allows for these sorts of stories? Because I feel like it's so unique and specific to the character that he can deal with these bigger things like spirituality, like meeting Jesus, going back to the Big Bang, etc.
Well, it's built into the character that was created by Len and Bernie. I mean, in the beginning, to them, they were young guys, and it was just a big, you know, swampy monster, you know, lurching around and stuff. But then Alan and Steve and John pulled out a deeper spiritual life for Alec and Swamp Thing. You remember the love issue where he and, yeah, Abby make love, and it was just like this extraordinary psychedelic experience. And the introduction of the green, that there is a dimension of living nature that Swamp Thing's plugged into. I mean, the implications of that are like really great spiritually, because we're all part of nature, but our society tends to like shut us away from it. And we've forgotten that, what that connection is. So it was only natural for me to explore that as the character was handed over to me to write. Although I got to say, I think I influenced Alan as well when I was penciling. You know, talking about these issues as he was, you know, contemplating the next issue and stuff, writing the next issue. But the Swamp Thing's journey is one of to his own self-awareness in the universe. And it's kind of like built in. He is a living embodiment of nature. He's an elemental, not a Frankenstein walking around. He's an elemental. And there's a lot to play with there, and it takes us in a kind of spiritual direction, or at least it did with me.
Yeah. In working on it, did you have any new stories jumping out of your brain? Are there scribbles on the end of your paper for upcoming Swamp Thing stories?
And in the middle of it, I proposed adding an extra issue to the three new ones. But they said, no, we don't want to change the contract. It'll be too hairy. But maybe at the end, we might contemplate doing an extra issue. So there still is discussion. That hasn't been finalized yet, but there is discussion of a fourth issue that I saw the value of. Oh man, there's this thing that we could explore here if we had some time, you know.
Well, hopefully that won't take another 40 years. I did want to ask you about a couple of like slightly more external things about the book. Other than the content of the story, I'm pretty excited about the fact that they're putting vintage ads in there. Have you had any input? Like, oh, we got to have the Sea Monkeys ad on this page or anything like that?
I've had no input. I haven't seen any of the facsimile editions yet to even see how this all works. I did suggest that we do a Hostess Pie ad with Swamp Thing and Arcane. I thought that might be fun, you know, but they didn't want to do new material. Mm-hmm. So they're just using the old ad. Somehow they've got to deal with the old advertiser that allows them to do it.
That's so funny. How did that happen? Like, are all those businesses going? I doubt it.
I don't know how that all works.
One other external thing, which I'm not necessarily bummed about, but it was interesting, I thought, is that this is going to be released under DC Black Label, even though they're booting up the Vertigo label at the same time. Same sort of thing. Was there any discussion about, like, hey, we could release this under Vertigo, or how did that end up there?
There was discussion, which I wasn't part of, but I heard it later from Alex, which was part of it was to put the old Vertigo to bed. Mm-hmm. You know, it was great what they did. Karen was brilliant and, you know, obviously affected pop culture in a huge way. But they wanted to put an end to it and start a Vertigo in a kind of like new feeling in a new direction. And so the publication of Swamp Thing 88 kind of became like the last period at the end of the Vertigo sentence. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, okay, we pulled it all the way through. That would be a really interesting question for Alex if you ever get to interview him about what went on at DC. I don't know if he can talk about that kind of stuff, but
right.
I was only getting it secondhand.
Yeah. Well, it is coming out, and I believe it's coming out on April 29th from DC.
Well, I think, sorry to interrupt you, Alex, but I think a big nod is they've released your run for free on the DC app. So everyone can right now do the work and get prepped if you haven't read it or reread it to get leading up to the release.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's got the issues, but they're all off, you know, in their attics or in long boxes hidden somewhere. You know?
Dusty, yeah.
Yeah, that was really a good move, I think, on their part to release them digitally like that. So it shows me that we're all moving in the right direction. But like I say, I've been Charlie Brown getting ready to kick that football too many times. So until I'm holding it in my hand, I'm not – you're going to go, yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to holding it in my hand as well on April 29th when I pick it up in stores. Rick, thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for taking the time to chat. Congratulations. I'm so excited that this is finally coming out.
Thank you for having me, guys.